Tell me your name again so I can just get a level.
My name's Roberta Schomburg.
And you're from?
And I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
And you work with?
And I work with, I'm a child development consultant.
With
children. With.
Oh, a consultant.
Yes.
So you're independent.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What's your phone number in Pittsburgh?
774-1167.
And your address?
RD1, Rochester, PA.
Okay, great. Got it.
You drove all the way from Pittsburgh to be with us. We know of several cases where children are afraid to move back into their homes that have been flooded, even though their families have gotten things cleaned up and back in order. There are families who are facing those kind of crises with their children. Plus, some children have moved back into their homes and are faced with nightmares and things like that at night, and are not sleeping very well, are suffering from various illnesses because of what they've experienced in this disaster. And so we're happy to have Roberta with us today to talk about children as they face disaster. We are putting it on video so that we can use it for future occasions, especially since there are people I know who wanted to be here today who didn't come because of the weather. But Roberta can introduce herself a little bit more thoroughly.
My name's Roberta Schomburg, and I work as a child development consultant in the Pittsburgh area. And I've had a lot of experience in teaching and preschool children in daycare centers, and mainly what I do now is go in and work with agencies and training staff. I'm working with individual children. I've had experience doing play sessions with children too. Most recently, I worked with a group of children after some tornadoes that were in western Pennsylvania. So later on in the presentation, I'd like to talk about some of the case material from that. And I'd like to also hear from you, any of you who are working with children, the kinds of play that you're observing, the kinds of behaviors you're observing, the stories that children are talking about, so that we can incorporate some of that into what I'm talking about today. What I want to present is a view of children in disasters, and particularly I wanted to talk about crisis intervention, the kinds of things that adults can do to help. It's now been about 3 months, I guess, since the floods occurred. So my guess is that you're beginning to see different kinds of behaviors emerge. There, immediately after any event, you will see some crisis reactions, and then things sort of go underground for a while until children are able to start dealing with them. Now's the time when adults can really move in and start helping children in that process, and the healing begins. I thought I'd start by begin today by talking about what is a crisis. All children, just like all adults, face crises in their lives. We can define a crisis as a situation that's out of the ordinary, that demands attention and resolution. A crisis is something that just doesn't go away. It's something that has to be dealt with at some level. And it's also a situation where the usual coping skills break down, where a person finds that the things that always worked in the past are no longer working to help maintain one's sense of balance. Also, there's an experience of overwhelming feelings, feelings such as grief, particularly loss, sadness, and sometimes a diffuse sense of anxiety that prevails, that children as well as adults have a hard time getting a handle on. Another thing that's characteristic of a crisis is that even after some initial resolution, the feelings remain, and what happens is that then they reoccur, they reemerge in similar situations later on. So my guess is that you often see children who seem to be doing all right until some heavy rains come or a storm, and then all the feelings come back and the anxieties reemerge, and you have to deal with it all over again. And that's characteristic of things that happen in crisis. There are generally two types of crises, and I'd like to mention this because I think the ways of dealing with them are very similar. One kind of crisis is a developmental crisis, and those are the normal developmental issues that all people experience as they grow and develop. And they're usually tied in with attempts to master new skills or new and changing needs of a person. These crises are triggered by an internal change, usually the push or need to grow and develop. For example, any of you who have seen toddlers going through a period of crisis around the issues of autonomy, where they really want to be independent, I'm sure you've seen a lot of the kinds of behaviors the temper tantrums, the outbursts, the inability to maintain control and to stay on an even keel. Also, you see these kinds of behaviors again in adolescence, when teenagers are pushing to move out away from the family and they're striving for independence. You see the same sort of unsettling behaviors. And even another example is the adult midlife crisis that people are now talking about. It's the same sort of unevenness, inability to cope, and where the usual coping skills break down. Okay, those are developmental crises, and I think the behaviors are often very similar, and the kinds of things you can do in response to that are very similar to situational crises. But for the rest of today, mostly I'll be talking about situational crises. And if you want to tie it in with any developmental issues, just you can bring them up and we'll go back to that. Situational crises are those external events that cause an unsettling experience. Many of these are very commonplace. For example, the birth of a sibling, a move to a new house, a change to a new school, moving, just entering school is one external situational crisis that can cause problems for children. And then there are the more traumatic experiences, things like divorce, being a victim of child abuse, the death of a parent, or the experience of natural disasters such as floods and tornadoes and earthquakes. Frequently, these situational crises are precipitated by a sense of loss or fear of loss. And I think that's something that we need to keep in mind in all of these, that there is a sense of loss that the children have experienced, whether it's a concrete loss of their home or someone in their family, or just the fear of losing their home and security, that having seen that it can happen to other people brings about a feeling of anxiety that it might happen to them at some point. Another characteristic of situational crises is that they generally affect a group, so that any of these crises would affect maybe a family. If it's the birth of a new sibling, it affects the whole family. If it's a natural disaster, it affects the whole neighborhood or an area of the state. So that what happens is, because a number of people are involved, it makes it difficult for children to get the support they need from the important people in their lives, because those people are also experiencing stress and are in a situation of crisis. And that's why it's very important for other people who can move in at this point to help out, because the people children generally rely on are often unavailable to help children through this period. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about the typical ways that children respond to crises. And if you have any examples of this, please feel free to contribute some. One thing that generally happens is that children regress to earlier behaviors. And this is an attempt for them to restore order, to get back to some safe period where they feel more comfortable. Often you see, maybe with preschoolers, you'll see them reverting back to thumb sucking again, or children will begin wetting their beds. Older children, school age children, you might begin to see more four-year-old behavior, hitting, punching, kicking, biting, things that they really have put aside and that they're returning to as a way of coping. Another thing that they respond, or that the age-appropriate behaviors are exaggerated, so that if you're looking at toddlers, even though we would expect toddlers to throw temper tantrums now and then, what you see is an increased number of temper tantrums in this age group. You also, with preschoolers, although four-year-olds tend to be highly aggressive, you'll see an increase in the amount of aggression that four-year-olds display. With teenagers, even though there are periods of unsettledness, this is even more exaggerated when they're in a situation of crisis. Another thing that is characteristic is that there are variations that are often based on sex and ages of the children. In the most of the studies that have been reported, there do seem to be some differences in the way that boys and girls handle stress. Some of this is probably due to the fact that they have grown up in cultures where it's accepted that men and women react differently, and so children are following along in those models and are reacting differently. But generally, the boys will do more acting out. And in some cases, it's easier for teachers and adults to deal with that because it's observable. You can see what's going on when the boys are fighting and hitting and kicking, and you can move in and help. The reaction often that we see in girls is that they withdraw and they keep it inside, and they become good little girls, and they don't let any of it be seen. And so what happens is that the girls just sort of go off and people don't realize that there's anything going on. So that's something to be especially aware of when you're working with children, that even especially with girls, if they're not acting out, that doesn't mean they're not in a crisis situation. Another thing that we found is that the way that children cope with the crisis is often tied into their developmental stage, so that the kinds of activities that you see them using to get themselves back in balance again will be age typical. And later on I'm going to talk about the way that some children used play after the tornadoes, and I think you'll see what some of those patterns are, so that younger children, very young children, will engage in sensory types of activities with their bodies. School-age children might use dramatic play as a way of working through some of the issues. And older children, teenagers, junior high schoolers, will use language as the way of getting a handle on it. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. Another response is that children in a sense of crisis are attempting to master or regain control. And this can sometimes cause problems because they will go to great lengths to regain the sense of power that they feel they've lost. And sometimes that brings them into conflict with the adults around them. They'll challenge, they'll defy, they'll try to push all the boundaries in an effort to regain the sense of control that they feel they've lost. Part of this response can be directed through play, so that children can, if they can, use play or if they can use story to recreate the event, then they can turn it from a passive experience into an active experience, and in that way gain control. So that's a really important avenue for children to use, and this can be through play, it can be through their artwork, it can be through creating stories, songs, poetry. I think those are probably the avenues that you will see most often. Okay, those are the responses that you probably see. Are there some other things that you're seeing that are different from those?
Mm-hmm. Nightmares.
That's one thing I didn't mention.
And difficulty in bedtime.
Yeah. Some of that is, I think, part of the regression that I talked about, in that children, you see them going back almost to the 17-month period where they're afraid to let go, to go to sleep. And so I think that's probably what you're seeing. It's a form of regression where they really are afraid that things... When toddlers go to sleep at night, they're often afraid to close their eyes because they think that the world won't be the same when they open their eyes. And if children have experienced a situation where they did go to sleep and the world was different when they woke up, then they might go back to that level. And so I think that's what you're seeing, is that they're afraid that things will change, something will happen while they're asleep, and if they stay awake, then they can keep it from happening. And that's exactly what toddlers think. If they can stay awake, they can keep things stable. So, What do children need then? There are a number of things that they need. Most of them are reliant upon the adult. The adults are really the important people after a crisis. And one thing they need is for the adults to recognize the crisis and to acknowledge it and to acknowledge the feelings that the children have and to let the children know that it's okay to have those feelings. That's probably the most important things that adults can do initially after any kind of crisis. For young children especially, and also for older children, I think it's important for the adults to name the feelings. Children have this diffuse sense of anxiety or this fear, and they often don't know what it is. And it's important for adults to say, you're feeling afraid, you're feeling grief, you're feeling sadness, and give them a name for it. And that gives them a feeling that they can get a handle on it and they can call it something. Once they can call it something, then it's easier for them to deal with it. Again, that it's all right to feel and it's all right to grieve and it's all right to be afraid, it's all right to be sad. And that it's important when especially when there's a loss of family members, that they have a lot of time to grieve. Not that we want them to dwell on it, but they need time to do that. They need time to deal with that all. Another thing that they need is for the adults to provide an organization and structure for them. One of the things that happens after a crisis is that children are often overwhelmed by their feelings and everything seems chaotic and unorganized. So one thing that adults can do is to keep things as stable as possible. Continue with the routines that the children have, whether it's going to school, after school activities, as much as possible to keep those things consistent so that they have some sense of where the boundaries are. That's hard to do because after crisis, all kinds of things change. Children may be staying at someone else's house. There are new situations to get used to. There are new people in their lives. So it really is hard to do, but as much as possible, if things can be kept stable for them, then that's helpful. In the school situation, it's not a time to be making changes in schedules or anything if you're in classrooms. It's important to keep things the way they were beforehand so that children have that sense of constancy. Also that the adult is available, that adults are available. And I mentioned before that when family members are in a crisis situation with a child, they are often not available. So it's important to get adults in there who can be available to children. Another thing that's important is for adults to provide accurate and factual information. Children need to understand what happened and what occurred. I would like also, to caution you against giving children too much information. I mean, they need all the facts and they need accurate information, but we don't need to scare children. They don't need to know that the occurrence of that this might happen again in 3 months or 6 months. That's not helpful, but what is important for them to know is what caused it. And if they can understand what caused it, what happened, exactly what happened, why it happened the way it happened, then they can feel that they have some control over it and that something could be done to prevent it in the future, if they understand those things. Sometimes this might involve taking field trips to see some of the things that, with older children, I think you could do that. Younger children, it would probably be too traumatic to take them to any site where any of this occurred. But with older children, older school-age children and adolescents, certainly they could go see some of the changes that occurred and begin to understand them.
Could you give us a sense of the age range that you're talking about when you're talking about younger children?
Younger children, I would say up to through 3 to 8. I think probably couldn't handle it. They would be so caught up in the emotional impact of it that I'm not sure they could handle the information that they would observe. But certainly the 5 to 8 year olds could use books to understand, because they're asking lots of questions about why this happens. After the tornado experience, one of the children that I'll be talking about later asked for a tape and book on weather, where they talked about hurricanes and tornadoes and explained how they occur and what causes them. That kind of thing can be helpful to children in the 5 to 8 year old group. And I guess along with this, it's important to remember that knowledge is power. If children have a knowledge about something, they feel that they have power over it and control over it. And they can control their responses if they have a chance to rehearse what they might do if it happened again. And let me pair along with that then. When you're giving them information, the other thing that's really critical for adults to do is to reinforce the fact that they will be safe. The whole safety issue must go along with that hand in hand. That we can't expect children to feel responsible for their own safety. That is really the adult's responsibility, and we have to communicate that to children. And that might mean saying, we won't let this happen. This is what we can do to prevent it. These are the things we are doing so that floods don't happen again. Or these are the precautions we're taking so that we can get you out of here if something like that would happen again. So that children feel that the adults are taking steps to keep them safe and that they won't let anything happen to them. And that, I think, can help reinforce a lot of the feelings you were talking about. Where they feel so helpless and powerless. If they feel that adults are there making some arrangements and making plans, then they don't have to worry so much about that. Another thing that adults can do is to be somewhat tolerant of the regression that children have and the minor infractions of rules. But it's very important that boundaries remain solid so that children have a sense of where those boundaries are. So that while the adult is tolerant, the adult doesn't let children just get away with anything because they're in a difficult situation. What happens in that case is that all it does is reinforce the child's feeling of being out of control, and then the child gets even more scared. So it's important that the boundaries remain constant, but that the adults don't react in angry ways is probably the best way. So that when adults are reacting in angry ways, then the adults seem out of control, and that's frightening too. When the adults can establish the boundaries and stick with them without getting angry with the children for regressing or violating the rules, children can use that a little better than being really flexible or very rigid. And another, the last thing that adults can do, well, the last two things, I guess, they kind of go together here, and this is probably the second most important after being available and to the children, is providing opportunities for symbolizing experiences so that children can find ways to express their concerns, express their fears, and express the feelings that they're having. For example, let me just give you some examples of ways that children might symbolize a disaster. A group of children after the tornado, these are young children, maybe three, four, really got caught up in breakdancing. And they were, I think what happened is the wild, uncontrolled body movements were very appealing to them. And what happened in their exploring breakdancing was that they could control those wild body movements in a way that helped them symbolize what they would like to be able to do with that tornado, which is to control the wild, out of control feeling that they had. Other ways that they might deal with it after the space shuttle disaster in daycare centers, in nursery schools, and in elementary schools, there's been a real increased interest in space Legos, little toy shuttles, and what we see is that children are really working on those issues through that kind of play, symbolizing what had happened for them and how trying to look at ways they could handle it. One example that I saw really fascinated me, a child had a shuttle that didn't ordinarily come apart. It wasn't a Lego shuttle that fit together, but it was a shuttle that had been assembled at some point. It was bought in a box and put together. Well, this child remembered that that the shuttle came apart, even though that wasn't part of the way he ordinarily played with it. And it took it all apart, just the way he had put it together. And when the adult said, "Why did you do that to the shuttle?" he said, I've had to pretend that it was broken in a way that no one could fix it. And I thought that was a really important way for him to symbolize the feeling of helplessness that he was feeling after seeing the shuttle disintegrate and knowing that people felt so helpless, that there was nothing that could be done. So I think if you keep your eyes open, you'll begin to see, I think, a lot of ways that children are symbolizing their experiences with this flood, and they need opportunities to do that. Other things you might see, especially with natural disasters, you might see an increase in medical play, an increase in rescue play, with children up through about eight. With older children, I think you find those themes in their stories. But with younger children, it's a lot easier to observe. Also with floods, probably water play is something that many children will use. For some, it may be too frightening. You might find them staying away from water altogether. For preschool children, it might mean pouring and filling containers. For older children, it might mean controlling it in terms of blowing bubbles or doing some experiments, floating and sinking experiments, or in some other way using water, maybe using it cleaning up a little more and scrubbing the floors and doing that sort of thing. Some way where they can get a feeling that they're controlling water. Early elementary school children, sometimes you might see an increase in children wanting to pour their own juice or pour their own milk and feel that they can control fluids, other kinds of fluids in addition to water. And what happens during this process is that children begin to represent the frightening elements of the situation, and when they can represent it, then they can control it. And they can control it in a couple of different ways. One way they control it is by changing the outcome. So if they're making up a story or if they're playing out a theme, they can change the ending so that nobody gets hurt. Or they can bring people in to rescue, or they can change it so that the water doesn't really wash people away or the shuttle doesn't really crash. Another thing they can do is play out the same theme, the real disaster, but play it out over and over and over until they feel they've mastered it and they've mastered the feelings that go along with it. Another thing that they can do in recreating the situation is that they can come in as the rescuer, and that's often really important for 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old children to feel that they can save someone. They can go in and pretend to save someone, or they can use little people to pretend to save someone. And the other thing that it does is it provides a distance for children who feel they can't talk about it. Often children, immediately after particularly, really can't verbalize what they're feeling, what occurred, but you will see it in their play. Speak louder, okay? So that if you're observant, then you can start picking up some of these themes that children, often if you'll ask them what they think about it, they'll say, "Oh, nothing," or "I don't want to talk about it." But if you watch their play, you can see that they really are dealing with it. If you can get them to talk about their night dreams, you'll find the themes in their night dreams. If you can get them to tell you stories or draw you pictures, you'll find the themes there. And then you can begin to talk about it. You can get them to begin to talk about it in a more distant way. And then they begin working on it and working through the feelings. And at a later time, then perhaps they can deal directly with you and talk directly with you. And along with this being able to symbolize the experience, it's important for them to have outlets for expressing the strong feelings that they have. These outlets might be talking or writing for older children. They might be drawing, painting, expressing through music. So in addition to just symbolizing the event, they're expressing the feelings so that they are making angry pictures or they're making sad pictures or they're singing sad songs. They're writing poetry that expresses the sadness, the grief, the loss. And that's another important thing for children. One thing that's especially helpful for children under 8 is to have unstructured art materials, things like clay, Play-Doh. Even for older school-age children, clay is a really nice medium for expressing the feelings, for pounding and getting out some of the anger, for molding and creating some of the more scary things that don't have any form, that seem very amorphous to the children. Clay is an unstructured medium that they can use to do that sort of thing. And once they, also paint is an important medium for children. And sand for children under 8, I don't know if older children would use sand that much. If they were at a beach, they might, but I'm not sure you could get them to play in a sandbox. But that would be an important thing, I would guess, for the children after the flood, because they can contain water with sand. And that for four, five, six-year-olds, that might be an important way for them to play out their feelings. And once children can express their feelings, then they can begin to organize them. And if they can organize their feelings, then they can start to control them. Okay, do you have any questions?
Talking about how adults can help, it seems like the adults or the parents at least are at risk too. If they've been affected and they don't have, they may not have the strength to go the extra mile with the kids because they might be experiencing increased alcohol or anything in their own lives. What's been your, how have you intervened in a family situation? When it's real important for parents to be able to do that and they can't.
I think that would be one avenue. I